I'm John Kroll. Coming up on No Limits, we're going to talk about one of America's and Central Indiana's saddest and most persistent problems, homelessness. We will discuss how people end up without homes and the ways that they can be helped. We will talk about this with our guests, Dayspring Executive Director Lori Kaysen, Trusted Mentors Executive Director Jerry Warner, and Amber Creek, a Carmel High School student whose focus on homelessness has earned her national attention. And, of course, you. Please join the conversation by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We look forward to talking with you. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about helping the homeless. We're fortunate to have as our guest Dayspring Center Executive Director Lori Kaysen. Lori, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. We also have Trusted Mentors Executive Director Jerry Warner. Jerry, good to have you.
Thank you as well. Enjoying it.
And we have as a special treat Carmel High School student Amber Creek. She is a junior at Carmel High School, and her work on homelessness for an Indianapolis-based group named Outreach has won national attention. Amber, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, among other things, I suspect this got you out of school, didn't it?
It did.
Okay. Let's. I'd like to get us started first by talking a little bit, so people got a frame of reference. And I will start with Jerry. Talk a little bit about what Trusted Mentors is, so that people have an understanding of where you're coming from.
Trusted Mentors is a local initiative. We started in 2003, mentoring adults at risk of homelessness, coming off the streets, and reentering after incarceration. We run what we call two tracks to success, mentoring for successful homeless prevention and mentoring for successful reentry. Everyone we mentor is 18 and over.
How many people do you serve?
In 2010, we mentored 85 adults, and while we mentored them, 86% remained housed.
Okay. And Lori Kaysen, can you talk a little bit about Dayspring?
Sure, be happy to. Dayspring Center is an emergency shelter for homeless families. We at Dayspring describe homelessness or the families as anyone with children, mother with children, father with children, two parents with children. As of late, we're starting to see grandparents with children. And what we do is we provide the basics of food, clothing, and shelter. Generally, our families are with us 45 to 60 days while we work on the issues that cause them to become homeless. And that way, we're able to stabilize them and help them move to the next suitable housing.
How many people do you serve during the course of a year?
Of the course of a year, we serve approximately 150, 160 families. That equates to about 600 people.
Oh, boy. So a fair number of people moving in and out of your facility.
Yes, a fair number. We are full 99.9% of the time. Generally, a room will become empty and available, and within 4 hours, it's turned over.
Do you have waiting lists generally? I mean, what happens if people come to you and you don't have space?
Unfortunately, we don't have a waiting list. So what we're able to do is really to work with that person to remain wherever they are and make sure that they are safe until something comes available, not only in our shelter, but the other shelters across the city.
Okay. And Amber, your story, I'm going to ask you to do something a little different. I want you to talk a little bit about how you developed your interest in homelessness and how you got yourself named to be one of the 15 students in the country who are part of Parade's All-America Service Team in the economics category. Just tell us your story, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, last year I met with an organization called Outreach Incorporated here in Indianapolis. They serve homeless youth ages 14 to 24, and I really felt a heart tug then before because I was serving people my own age, and I didn't even realize that youth homelessness was such an issue, especially in Indiana. So I talked with them about their needs, and one thing that came up was, since they're a Christian ministry, they wanted some place that their youth could learn about God and develop their own faith. And I've been in a Bible study for years now and go to St. Luke's, which has been a huge part of my life. And although it was crazy, I decided to take on renovating their old messy attic and turning it into a sacred place, which they use daily now. It has a training conference area for educational purposes, as well as meetings with case managers or staff meetings. There's a chapel for Bible studies, a private meeting room for one-on-one counseling, and then three libraries, a faith library to help them develop that faith that, you know, is so important, a self-help library to get them to, you know, be able to overcome what they've faced in their past, and an inspirational library to help them keep going.
I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. That sounds, Amber, like a huge construction project. How did it all come together, among other things? Where did the money come from, and what was your part in all of that?
Well, in 2009, I won the Power of Children Award from the Annapolis Children's Museum, and that gave me a $2,000 grant. And with that, that was huge help. I couldn't have done it without that. And then I had several different donations. I had 42 donors from businesses and individuals that helped me. And then I had 45 volunteers who were more than happy to come help me because I didn't know anything about construction when I went into this. But I did learn a lot. So with them, it was able to be done. And I spent about 5,000 hours working and had so many more volunteer hours. I can't even think of it right now. But
how large was the budget? All told, you said 42 donors in addition to the $2,000 grant you got from the Children's Museum.
Well, the actual ending cost was $2,500, and the original, like, what Outreach had priced it before as being around $35,000.
Uh-huh.
But then when I did my budget, I think it was around 4,500, I think. Yeah.
4,500. So, you mean 4,500 or 45,000?
4,500. $4,500 was my
okay.
budget.
And they said 35,000. So among other things, you did it for $30,000 less than.
Yeah,
than
I'm
original.
A good shopper.
Okay. And so our audience will get this. You are 16 now.
Yeah.
If it's 2009 when you started this, you were 14, right?
Well, I started in 2010, so when I was 15,
okay.
but I got
so,
the award.
So actually you were well on your way to collecting Social Security at that point, right? I want to talk a little bit now just about how large a problem this is right now. Homelessness is one of those sort of perpetual causes out there, and at times I think we think we've gotten a handle on it. But, for example, with the economic downturn, have conditions gotten worse or gotten better? Lori Kaysen, I see you nodding your head, so I'm going to go back to you.
Yes. The problem of homelessness has always been with us, I think. But I believe that because of the recent economic downturn that it has increased, and it has touched people that previously never thought that they would end up homeless, but with the loss of a job and the inability to pay rent or their mortgage, people find themselves without a place to go. So the problem is huge. Families are the largest, are increasing the fastest. Currently, there's about 40 to 45% of the homeless population that make up families, and families with children, couples with children, and so it is it's a huge problem. It's estimated that approximately 3,000 children here in central Indiana are homeless on any given night. So you see it's a huge problem here, right here in the city.
And how do we define homelessness? Just to make, you know, you say that 3,000 right. children.
Right. There are various definitions, but the definition that is most common, it's used by the school system and also used by a lot of these homeless service providers here in the city, is anybody without a residence of their own. So that includes people who are doubled up and who are moving from place to place, so they have no stability. That also includes people who are living in cars, living in shelters.
Okay. Jerry Warner, have things gotten worse in the past few years with the economic downturn?
I'm sure they have. We we're kind of removed from that because the people we serve are referred by referring agencies. We work with 16 different agencies here in town. So we know, though, agencies referring people to us for mentors. And one of the interesting groups we're seeing more and more of is people over 40. We matched a volunteer mentor just this past week with Pam, and she's 54, and she had been homeless, has a health issue, went to Horizon House, got housing, and we matched a mentor to help her stay housed. There's a tendency to think we get them housed, we've solved the problem, but they need the ongoing support to learn how to, you know, if you've been homeless, you have to learn how or relearn how to stay housed.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know it, to some degree, all three of you work on the what you call reentry.
Correct.
I would think, with a jobless rate that hovers somewhere around 9%, that reentry is a much more difficult challenge right now than it would have been, say, when the unemployment rate was around 4 or 5%. Yeah. Jerry Warner, how are you dealing with that? Because obviously, just getting them housed, if you're not in a situation where they have income or anything mm-hmm. that they can draw upon to maintain the housing situation.
I was looking through the January statistics, and over 20% of the folks that they found and are documented on in January. Over 20% had a felony. A certain portion of the homelessness issue, population is related to that issue of felonies. It's been real interesting on the issue of reentry. What people don't realize is once you commit a felony, you become an unemployable citizen in many ways because businesses will do a background check and not hire you. So what we work, though, on is that employment issue of persisting, of becoming more improving your skills to be employable, whether, we had one mentor whose mentee was 18, 19 and in the system, and he worked with him to become a good employable citizen and practice some interviewing skills and things like that.
We are talking about homelessness. Here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Let's talk a little bit about that issue of if you have a criminal record, if you've got a felony on your record. Jerry, you say at some level that a person becomes unemployable or probably more fairly very difficult to employ at that point. What do you tell those folks? I mean, what do you say in that situation?
Well, you don't give easy answers because mm-hmm. there isn't an easy answer. It really is about working with the mentors, maybe to be a networker for seeing jobs that are available and then communicating out to so that they can respond faster. Persistence. Is just crucial, and sometimes it's about being in the right place at the right time and acting on it.
Now, Amber, how many people does your new center serve?
Outreach annually serves about 600, but the in and out number is kind of hard to define because of the kids' schedules, and if they don't have money to get on the bus, then they can't come, or just not having the resources that they need to get there. So,
what do you mean by in and out number?
Well, like on a given day, they don't know how many they're going to have. They might have like meetings set up with a case manager, but if they can't get there, then that meeting's canceled. So, but it's used every day, for most of the day, sometimes for a staff meeting or Bible studies or whatever. So it's getting used. It's really helpful.
And of those, what is the age range of the kids that you serve?
14 to 24.
14 to 24. So you take them all the way into young adulthood,
mm-hmm.
Adolescence up through that.
Yeah.
And, what is the bulk, would you say, of the people who are served by outreach?
Probably more of the young adults. But, I'm not quite sure. They have a goal program, which helps the kids stay in high school, which has been very successful. And then they have a step-up program, which is for older adults that, aren't in school but that still need the help to get a job or get ID or whatever. So
we are talking about helping the homeless. Our guests are Dayspring Center Executive Director Lori Kaysen, Trusted Mentors Executive Director Jerry Warner, and Carmel High School student and National Award winner Amber Creek. I'm John Kroll. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about helping the homeless. Our guests are Dayspring Center Executive Director Lori Kaysen, Trusted Mentors Executive Director Jerry Warner, Carmel High School student and Parade National Award winner Amber Creek. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You also can send comments or questions via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, I think, Lori, you mentioned that it's estimated that at any given day there are 3,000 homeless children in central Indiana. Just going around, and mentally, admittedly, I'm a journalist and don't do math all that well, but I calculate your capacities here, and we're far short of that.
Yes.
How many people are there out there who are not being served right now?
Unfortunately, just last month, Dayspring received over 400 calls from people who were looking for shelter that we could not fill because there just was no space available. So we really try to help people figure out where they can stay and be safe until something really comes open. The need is greater than the actual space and that we do have available. We have found that people are homeless and living doubled up, and they're okay until something else happens or they can no longer stay where they're staying. So the school system has the means to figure out and offer services to the families, too, while they're living with another person. We say that Dayspring is a place of last resort. They stay with people, move from place to place until they have nowhere else to go, and then they try the emergency shelter system.
Well, let me ask this real quickly. If they can't go to Dayspring, where else would they go specifically? What sites would they go to?
There are other family shelters, such as the Salvation Army and Holy Family Shelter, which are here in the city. If it is a case of domestic violence, then they can go to Julian Center and other shelters that are in the city. So,
well, let me ask this real quickly. Of those 3,000, I mean, how far short are we of being able to deal with that kind of capacity?
To be real honest, I don't think that 3,000 children number is even close to what we know. Those are the ones that we have really been able to count. Most families don't want to be counted because there's fear that their children will be taken away, and that is not true. You can't take a child away because they have no place to live, only if the child is in some type of danger. So, but people have that belief that, you know, if someone finds out that we don't have a place, my children will be removed from the home. So people don't want to be counted, and people don't want to be entered into any system, basically. And so they remain hidden. And that's the reason it's so difficult to put our arms around the problem of homelessness, and especially the hidden homeless. That's what we call them, the hidden homeless, because they're just not, they're not standing on a street corner. They're not, you know, sitting on the curb with their children. I don't think that we've had a problem like this with family homelessness, especially since the Great Depression. And we all remember the Depression-era photographs of people sitting on the corners and holding signs and tent cities and things of that nature.
Yeah, the Hoovervilles.
That's exactly right.
That stuff. Well, and I would guess, you know, that in this country where, you know, we've sort of made affluence into a religion,
mm-hmm.
And this idea that you're defined by what you make and what you possess and all of that sort of stuff, that one of the things that is a struggle to deal with is the idea that somehow that this is a shameful or embarrassing situation.
Right.
Jerry Warner, is that one of the things you have to work past in trying to mentor people, or how do you deal with that?
I do think homelessness, being at risk of homelessness, some of the trauma that goes with being an ex-offender, definitely plays into the relationship. There's trust level. There's a sense of failure that you know, the people we mentor have to learn that to not withdraw if they fail, but to keep going. And a lot of that's that protection that they've learned along the way. You know, it's really hard to think, how do I survive on nothing? And then to as one woman said, you begin to believe that you don't deserve anything else. And so having a mindset that says, I can stay housed, I can stay employed, takes time. And that's what one of the things we encourage our volunteers to understand is it takes time. There's going to be setbacks along the ways, but there's going to be successes too.
We are talking about homelessness here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Lance, welcome to the program.
Yes. My question is, are there rough figures on how many homeless there are in America, not just locally? And we did hear last year that there were 15,000 homeless people in Houston, Texas. And I'll take my answer off the line. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Lance, for the call. Well, who would like to take a stab at that? How large a problem is this nationally?
Nationally, I think over, and the figures really vary, but I do know that there are estimated to be at least 1.5 million homeless children. So if you figure that there are, you know, a parent or two with each child, you're looking at a figure well over 4 million, you know. So 3, 4 million, and don't quote me on that because I don't have the statistics right here in front of me, but it is a huge problem that exists in this country.
And is it are there parts of the country that are more heavily affected than others?
They say that the larger areas, the larger cities such as New York and Chicago, and it's definitely a problem in California with California's economy. But I think it's both a rural and an urban problem that exists, and how we address it, I think, is different.
Well, and is it some of it? I know, having traveled in California, they had a problem several years ago in San Francisco and some of the more temperate places,
right,
not as far north, the people were actually would be building shelter in effect under the streets, under the
right,
grates, because they could get some heat and all of that. And at the time, at least, the understanding was that it was you could live outdoors
right,
almost year round there.
Right.
It's a little bit harder to do it here, or harder even
right,
more so to do it in, say, Minnesota and the Dakotas than here. So do the warmer states have a larger problem, or
I believe they probably do, because generally what happens, I worked at Horizon House many years ago, which is a drop-in center and a day
yeah,
center for the homeless. They serve primarily single individuals, and there are a number of agencies that provide outreach, such as the Homeless Initiative Program and Horizon House and Wheeler Mission, where they actually go and go under the bridges and things to find people and make sure that they are safe and have what they need. And I know that from my experience working at Horizon House, people would leave as the weather got colder and go to a warmer climate.
We've gotten an email question from Ryan from Indy. It says, why is all this money the guest is talking about being used to renovate chapels and Bible study areas rather than providing real education opportunities that will give these young homeless Hoosiers a true shot at landing a job or improving their lives? seems like a well-intended error. Let's try to get these people education and jobs before feeding them a bunch of religion. I think, Amber, that one's probably directed at you, so I'll toss it in your direction. Make the argument for spending the money on Bibles and chapel.
Well, Outreach didn't spend the money. It was me. So, because I felt that God, because I know what a difference he's made in my life and how important that is. You know, God created everyone here, and he loves all of them. And I think if they have the faith that he is going to lead them where they are supposed to go. And what was the other part? I'm sorry.
Well, whether it would have been better invested in creating educational opportunities,
Outreach has programs, one called GOAL, which is graduation, occupation, address, and lifestyle, that focuses on helping these kids get an education, continue a secondary education, getting a job and being able to have that stable lifestyle. And my project did do some of that because I gave them the educational resources, a place that they can, you know, study or work with other people. And I think it is super important, which is why kind of my second, you know, after my other project is I went with the National Christian Foundation, which kind of includes the faith part, and set up an educational fund that will allow me to, you know, have people donate, and then it'll go to Outreach. Hopefully I'm going to be able to spread out in the future, but for those educational purposes, because I think education is important and is the solution to getting them off the streets.
I've gotten another email question from a listener by the name of Michael, who says, do the guests see a higher rate of LGBT, meaning lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgendered youth homeless than their heterosexual counterparts? Has anybody done breakdown on that? Laurie, I suspect you're the one who deals most with those issues.
Well, DaySpring is unique in that we serve anybody as long as they have children involved. So if we, if a family comes to us and they've been living as a family, whether or not they are lesbian, gay, or transgendered, they are eligible to receive services at our shelter. And I know that we are probably, I do know that we are the only shelter in the city that is able to accept couples regardless.
Of sexual orientation or gender.
Right. Exactly.
Well, let me ask this then. Rather than sort of dancing around in these specifics, can you sort of give me a profile of what a homeless person looks like right now? Where are these folks? And I guess where I'm going with this is I think when a lot of people think of homelessness, they think of the guys who are on the street corners or whatever with the signs up when you walk by them in downtown Indianapolis or any urban center. And that's really a very small subculture
right there.
So can you talk to me a little bit about who the homeless person could be?
I think it's everything that anybody could imagine. I know that it's children. Mm-hmm. I also know it's families. I do know that it's also the single guy that you may see on the street. Just to add a note that most panhandlers that you see, whether they're downtown or standing on the exit ramps of the interstate, are probably not homeless. They did do a survey of those people, and they are not homeless. So that is also a misconception that people have. So
how much damage does that misconception do to you when you want to try to serve people who are genuinely homeless?
It does do a disservice because people, as you said, have this preconceived notion of who the homeless are. And so getting in there and trying to change that perception is difficult. But I think that part of what I know we all do is to provide education for people and awareness on who the homeless are and what's the best way to serve them. The common thing that people have, I don't know if, you know, there is a profile that we can give, but the common thing is that they're poor. Mm-hmm. Poverty runs rampant among homelessness, the homeless in the city and in the country. And I think that we have to address why people are living in poverty. The U.S. Census Bureau just released statistics for 2010, and they found that right here in Indiana that poverty rate has practically doubled in the last 10 years. And so poverty is defined as anybody that is making below a certain predetermined level. And for a family of three, for example, that's just a tad bit over $18,000. If you're on public assistance, you are receiving less than $9,000. So, you know, even cutting that in half. So we're talking about the poorest of poor that can't afford. There was another survey that determined that in order to survive here in central Indiana, and we're an affordable community, that you must make at least $13 to $14 an hour to support your family with housing and food and clothing. And minimum wage is just a tad over $7 an hour. So you can see the gap that exists there. And so that is why people are finding themselves without a place to live.
We are talking about helping the homeless here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Has your fundraising dried up during this economic downturn? I mean, you know, I think to some level all three of you are in not-for-profit capacities. Amber's right at the beginning of her career and clearly has had some success. But Jerry is Trusted Mentors, I presume, is a not-for-profit, a 501c3?
Correct. We are 501c3. We just held a fundraiser last week and raised about what we did last year. So, but we had hoped to raise more so that we could maintain our efforts and maintain the staffing necessary to train mentors and maintain the support. It is not easy. I don't know that it's ever been easy. But there are good people out there who care. And sometimes it's reaching them. I do think that some of the insecurity people are feeling about the future has affected the decisions they make, because they're like, well, I just don't know. And I think that's been really in play the last couple of months.
How large is your budget?
We are at a little over $200,000 a year.
And how large is your staff? That's not a whole lot of money.
That's not a lot of money to work with 85 people. We have three full-time employees. We rent we're located on Virginia Avenue, but serve agencies throughout the city. We try to do what we can without having people feel like that they're giving to something that's not recognizing the value of their donation. And so we have three full-time staff to work with 85 people.
Lori, how about your fundraising? How's Dayspring been doing?
We have a budget just over $800,000 a year to serve those 600 individuals that come through the shelter. And we are supported mainly by individuals and congregations here in the city. And so we have seen in the past couple of years, because of the economic downturn, that people are giving less. And in addition to that, we do have some federal and local funding, and we have lost a significant amount within this last year because of change in funding priorities, basically.
How much have you lost?
We've lost a little over $100,000, which is a significant part of our budget.
Per year? Or?
Per year, yes, at this point, just in 2011.
Okay.
And as I said, because of a change in funding priorities.
So what's going on is that while the demand is increasing for your services,
yes,
the resources with which to meet that demand,
yes,
have begun to dissipate.
Yes.
We are talking about helping the homeless here on No Limits with our guests, Dayspring Center Executive Director Lori Kaysen, Trusted Mentors Executive Director Jerry Warner, and Carmel High School student and National Award winner Amber Creek. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I am John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about helping the homeless with our guest, Dayspring Center Executive Director Lori Kaysen, Trusted Mentors Executive Director Jerry Warner, and Carmel High School student, National Award winner Amber Creek. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Michael, welcome to the program. How are you doing?
Great, thank you.
And your question?
I'm curious to know what are the root causes of homelessness, lack of education, addictions, mental illness, those types of things.
Good question. We will take it up. Thank you for calling.
Sure.
Okay, root causes. I presume that's a tougher question than it sounds like, because if you knew the cause, it'd be easier to solve the problem. But Jerry Warner, how about if we start with you?
Okay. There is not one answer. Everything he listed is certainly attributable to the people we work with. Yes, some have addictions. The mental health issue has certainly risen in the last 20 years nationally. Because of the change in mental health care. But we also know, is it lack of education? That certainly contributes to it. One of the agencies we work with works with is 18-year-olds who are aging out of foster care. And we know that that is a significant portion of the 18 to 24-year-olds they age out of foster care at 18. They're trying to be an adult on their own. They make mistakes, and many find themselves homeless or incarcerated. So that's another portion of it. Veterans are another group of the homeless. Probably over 20% or near 20%. I think, Lori, who are veterans.
And we plan to do a future show on actually homelessness among the veterans, so that it's a subject, obviously, that deserves serious consideration. Yeah. Lori Kaysen, any other root causes out there that we haven't mentioned so far?
I know that domestic violence plays a significant role in homelessness, especially family homelessness, but I think that throughout the education is a huge factor in homelessness. We know that as the level of education rises, the incidence of homelessness decreases. And so part of what we do at Dayspring is to offer the opportunity to improve their education level.
Amber, did you have... Yes, please.
Sometimes, from just talking to outreach, sometimes it's safer for the youth to be on the streets, which is really, really hard, especially for me to understand coming from a great family.
Safer than being in their homes, yeah.
Their home because of, drug, alcohol abuse, whatever. And then other times, it's just simply the parents have too many kids. Housing won't allow that many. The oldest, has to leave. Things that I never could imagine that, aren't necessarily...
Which is a poverty-related issue, too,
right.
If you're in a housing situation like that. Well, let me ask this. Real quickly, what would one concrete step be in this community we could do to alleviate some of the problems created by homelessness? I'm going to take it around the horn because it may be a different answer for each one of you. I'll start with Lori Kaysen.
I think that what we really need to do is contact your local and your federal government officials and your congressmen and your representatives so that they can really start to address this issue. And because if there is no funding for it, not much is going to be done at this level. So that is the number one thing that people can do. And then also be aware and also get involved with local agencies here that work directly with people and provide services to the people that are either on the streets or doubled up that have no place to go.
Jerry Warner.
Well, we certainly hope that folks listening to this might consider mentoring. It's one-on-one. We ask someone to commit to a year. We provide training and ongoing support because it's the human dimension that can make such a difference. We certainly understand the need to fund and support efforts to fund those who are homeless. It's such an economic cost to our city to allow people to be homeless. whether it's the image of the panhandlers on the street or the inability for the children to get a good education because they're moving from place to place and they can't stay in the same school. It's just an economic cost. So for people to do two things, I guess. One is to be willing to support the agencies who work with the homeless, but also to learn and care about those who are at risk. We hear a lot of judgment about people who are homeless. And when you get to know them, you begin to understand their human story. The support that they need to encourage them to move forward with their lives.
Mel, welcome to the program. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Your question?
More of a statement, and I'll try to keep it brief. In the 60s, we were fighting a war on poverty. It seems like in the 2000s, the war is on the poor themselves. The political will to solve this problem simply doesn't exist. It seems to be quite the opposite. It's a blame the poor situation. And as the young lady just said, if people would get to know these people, they would understand how close everybody actually could be to this situation.
Thank you for the call. Real quickly, his point really is that there's been a change in mindset from the days of Lyndon Johnson and declaring war on poverty and creating great society programs and all of that. We've now, and I'm going to try to be even-handed here and just describe what's going on, but at a Republican presidential debate a few nights ago, one of the candidates for president, when he was asked, what should we do for a 30-year-old man who gets a life-threatening illness if he doesn't have health insurance? And the answer was pretty much let him die, accept responsibility for the decisions he's made or his life choices. That's a significant shift in the space of about 45 years in terms of mindsets. Is there validity to the caller's point here? Lori Kaysen, you are nodding your head up and down.
I'm always nodding my head up and down.
Oh, okay. So that was thoughtfulness, not agreement then.
Exactly. Okay. But I think in some regards it is true. We have seen a lot of policy shift toward those who don't have money. And I think that that's a tragedy in this great country that we live in. So In the 20 years that I have been working with the homeless here in Central Indiana, the shift has been dramatic. There were programs and funds available 20 years ago that were astronomical, and now we're fighting for every dollar. The city of Indianapolis, for example, through HUD. And so I'm not blaming the city at all because they do a remarkable job with what they're given. But their funding, they only provide $25,000 per year to Dayspring Center for funding to solve this problem of homelessness and family homelessness. So I think that there have been some policy shifts that have had a great impact, a negative impact on the people who are living in poverty.
Well, let me give voice though to the other side of the argument. If you've got somebody who has committed a felony or has not contributed anything to society, what then do the rest of us owe that person? Jerry Warner, you're looking at me.
I come out of church work, and so I was thinking of Mother Teresa's quote: "If we judge someone, we have no room to love them." And it has been difficult to listen to some of the discussions. Someone pointed out that 98% of the poor in America have a refrigerator. But if they live in the areas of poverty, what they realize is there's no grocery stores. They can't buy food on a daily basis. They have to have a refrigerator. So there's a whole conversation that's divorced from the reality that much of our folks face. How do I get to work that pays me $8.50 an hour if my car won't get me there and I can't pay to repair my car.
Or I don't even have a car.
Or I don't have a car and the bus doesn't go there. You know, there's jobs out in Plainfield that people can't get to. I'd say, too, on the question of felonies, the cost in our system to keeping people in prison is massive. 25% of all state employees work in the Department of Corrections. There are more employees in the Department of Corrections than in the Family and Social Services Administration. We really have used incarceration as a solution to a problem. But now when they're being released, there are background checks. And and not only will companies not hire them, insurance companies will not let companies hire them.
I'm going to challenge you just a little bit on this. Not so much challenge, but does it bother you at all? Because 50 years ago, we would not have made what is basically a practical economic argument here about employing. We would have made the argument human beings have worth. And we need to treat them as such. But you sort of go right around that and have to make the argument, the classic, it's costing us more to do it this way rather than making what is, in essence, a spiritual argument.
Well, and I don't think one is greater than the other. I think they need to go together. Again, coming out of church work, Jesus talked a lot in Scripture. The Old Testament talks a lot about the care for the widow and orphans are most vulnerable. Society has changed. Widows can a lot of vulnerable people, whether it's mental health issues, families, difficult families where they didn't get a chance that many of us had. So having an attitude that says these people are valuable, that we are wasting human capital, is not. It can be balanced with the economic argument because they do run together.
Well, and Amber, I'd like to talk a little bit about the generational. I mean, to aside from your award-winning volunteer work here, I mean, when you're in your real life as a high school student, I mean, is homelessness something that is on their radar at all that they care about?
Well, I started a club at school called Youth for a Different Tomorrow. And that's one of the things we're kind of focusing on. We just promoted John McLaughlin tweet up thing that was about homeless youth and about his career that was for Outreach. And then we also promoted the concert with John McLaughlin to get the awareness out about youth homelessness. But being that I've been volunteering since I was 4 years old and I didn't even know about the issue, that, you know, clearly I think that, you know, more kids should know about it because they're kids that could be walking in the halls like you. They don't look homeless. They look, you know, just like you and me. And that's one thing that makes it hard is because they don't want to look homeless. They want to look like everyone else. So.
And that there's that sense of isolation or that you've got a secret that you have to keep.
Mm-hmm.
How widespread is the threat here? I mean, I guess what I'm going at is periodically we will see stories about just how far away from being homeless the average family lives. In some cases, it's two paychecks. Some cases, it's three. Some cases, it's only one. How close are we to living on the edge right now, Lori?
I think the poorer the family, the more on edge they are. People should spend approximately 30% of their income for housing and housing-related items. And if you're only making $7 an hour, you're spending probably the great majority of your income on housing. And generally, the jobs that pay minimum wage don't have great benefits that go along with them. So if you miss a couple of days of work, you don't get the pay. And in fact, you may lose your job. And therefore, the first thing to go, the first thing that you're not able to pay is your mortgage or your rent. And so I think there are a great number of people that are living on edge that we just don't know about, and they are living paycheck to paycheck.
We have gotten an email from a listener, several of you may know, Jeremy S. Baber, who says, it is wonderful to hear the issue of homelessness being discussed on the program. This is an issue that is not understood in our community. I volunteer my time serving as the president of the board of directors of the Indianapolis Interfaith Hospitality Network, and much like Dayspring, IHN organization provides shelter and services to homeless family units with children. There are too few options for homeless families in Indianapolis. So what I want to talk to, you know, sort of in the remaining minute or so that we've got in this program, if you are homeless and you are looking for help, where should your first call go?
Your first call probably should go to 211, and they have a comprehensive referral network to get you to the place that you really can receive assistance from. So just the number 211.
211. Amber, should they try to connect with Outreach?
Outreach has a hotline. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but
do they have a website?
Yeah, their website is www.outreachindiana.org. And if people don't have time to write that down or whatever, they can email me at goodheart.goodworks@gmail.com.
Gmail.com. And yeah. Jerry Warner, where should they call if they want your help?
Well, we receive through agencies,
okay.
so they need IHN as a referring agency, for example, so to take the steps to say, not only do I need to take some steps to make some, to do it differently, move forward with my life, but maybe somebody can help me, a support network can help me do it better.
In our closing words here, if you had a message for someone who is homeless right now and really feeling the kind of sense of despair we've been talking about for the past hour, in just a few words, what would that be? Amber, I'll start with you.
That we care. It really is true that there are people out there that want to help and that they should have hope in themselves. So,
Lori Kaysen.
I want to tell anyone that is struggling with homelessness that there is an opportunity and there is hope. So connect with an agency that can provide that assistance to you and the support, as Jerry said.
And Jerry, in just a few words.
Oh, I'll quote one of our first women we worked with who said, giving up is not an option.
We have been talking about helping the homeless with our guests, Day Center Executive Director Lori Kaysen. Lori, it's been a pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you.
Trusted Mentors Executive Director Jerry Warner. Jerry, pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
And Carmel High School student Amber Creek, who won a national award. Amber, congratulations. It was a joy talking with you.
Thank you.
We will be talking next week about election reform. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Please stay with us.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m. And you can listen online at WFYI.org.